The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM.
All right, I'm delighted to say that former guest of Off the Ball is now back with us, Justin Marshall. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, actually, and it's nice to be on Off the Ball again. I really enjoyed my time when I was on the show in Dublin.
When was that? Was that last year before that test, or was it a couple of years around the Lions tour, was it?
No, it was last year, the test match. So, yeah,
feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Because even if you look at the form of Ireland over the last 12 months, the idea that we were kind of world beaters, or so we thought at the time, it seems like a bit longer than 11 months ago.
Yeah, I guess it does. But when you think about the amount of rugby that's been happening in recent times and some of the big games, I think when you put it in context, this game between Ireland and the All Blacks is massive. So regardless of what's happened in the last, let's just say, 4 years since the last Rugby World Cup, knockout games are knockout games, and previous history has absolutely nothing to do with how you progress in the tournament.
What is it like for an All Black when it comes to a week like this, when it comes to the pressure that comes with a quarterfinal? Because there's a pressure with a World Cup final at this stage where they're expected to win a final, let alone a quarterfinal.
Yeah, well, we've got history, and not all of it is great. You know, yes, they're back-to-back Rugby World Cup champions, but we've also had, disappointment. I've been involved in two semi-final losses at Rugby World Cups, and they were unpleasant, once against France and once against Australia. In both of those games, we were well and truly a better side. I'm not saying that super arrogantly, but we just were. Before we lost the semi-final to Australia, we put 50 points on them in Sydney. So, we were a good side. But that goes to show you that, Rugby World Cups can bite you really quickly. You think of 2007 against France as well. Losing in a quarter final. The All Blacks, I guess, are very well aware that, regardless of whoever they're playing in a knockout game, you can get bitten. And so I think we're probably not as over cocky as what we have been in the past because of that disappointment.
What, in your view, changed in the aftermath of 2007?
I think the complacency of, looking at teams and probably looking too far ahead caught up with the All Blacks. Also from that game, I think what really came out of it game plan wise was, if you relook at that game, and this is what the All Blacks addressed, so in a long-winded way I'm giving you an answer to the question, they recognised that they left lots of opportunities out there and a hell of a lot of points, particularly in the first half, that they didn't turn their pressure into points. And I remember saying at halftime, I was actually there doing radio, and I said to my colleague, I said, man, I don't feel like we've got enough points for the pressure we've put on them.
Right.
And I think that's how the All Blacks reviewed that game. And so now when they get to the big matches, they're very ruthless in making sure that they turn pressure into points. And I think mentally, that's a real shift that they made, that yes, they can score tries from anywhere. They can break out and score them from inside their own 22. Everybody in Ireland will remember them doing that, and going the length of the field to win a match. But in these knockout types of games, you've got to take the opportunities. And I think that's a big lesson that they learnt from 2007.
When it comes to the big famous review that was done in the aftermath of 2007, is there specific moments? Is it that World Cup in 07 that was used as an example as to where the All Blacks need to be better? Or was there other moments from other World Cups that were used?
Oh, the disappointments, like I said, I've been involved in a couple of them, are very evident. And any loss in an All Black jersey is hard to take and hard to swallow and doesn't go down well in New Zealand. And it's heavily reviewed and critiqued. But, yeah, I certainly think that 2007 being knocked out of a World Cup in the quarterfinals, that hurt. That hurt the All Blacks. They'd never had to go through that before. And I think the review that both Graham Henry and Steve Hansen, ironically, did after that, they wanted to put in place some structures that made sure that the All Blacks didn't suffer that type of disappointment again. And a lot of that was a bit of grounding as well. There's probably a bit of arrogance there that, the quarterfinals aren't a problem for the All Blacks. It's semi-finals and finals where we've had history. Well, bang, all of a sudden we got knocked out in a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And I think the ramifications of that, All Blacks are all about history. We've got a great history, and That started to be a real blight, and disappointment after disappointment, and then a quarterfinal loss. I think history really shows now that they're a lot more ruthless, and they take it very seriously and don't look too far ahead.
When you say it's tough for an All Black to kind of be around after a defeat like that, when you said there's a lot of criticism, is that people on the street stopping you, giving out to you about your performance? Is it the media or what is it?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. New Zealanders are very passionate. Don't get me wrong. They're not nasty. They just care, and it hurts them. It hurts the nation when the All Blacks lose. You know, I'll give you an example. When I returned after 2000 and after 99, and came back into New Zealand and picked up my suitcase when I arrived home, there'd been two or three people write on it, losers and stuff.
Oh my God.
So. Yeah, we take our loss pretty harshly, and yeah, there was. I think we grew up as a nation, though, particularly after 99. You know, 2003 wasn't as bad when we got knocked out in the semi-final there, but yeah, after 99 there was a real public fallout. You know, John Hart was the coach at the time, and he had a racehorse, and he went to the races after, you know, a couple of months after the World Cup loss, and people were booing his horse and booing him, and you know, the odd peanuts was spitting as well, you know, like just real childish behaviour. And I think that was highly publicised as well. And I think it was quite embarrassing for us as a nation that we reacted like that. And I think we've grown up a lot and accepted losing a lot better as a nation.
For you personally, was the writing in the suitcase the worst thing that you got?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was. You know, I didn't get too heavily criticised because I was on the bench, so it was the first time I'd been dropped by John Hart, and as an All Black actually, and I think it was in 5 years, and he decided to drop me for the semi-final, which was a big call on his behalf. Mm. But because of that, you know, it was more what happened in the game and the way that we got to the point where we lost, that a lot of the starting 15 got heavily criticised, and he made some selection, some selection changes that were very heavily criticised as well. He switched Christian Cullen to centre, and put Jeff Wilson at fullback, and a few other, obviously dropped me as well. And I think that was another part of, you know, coaches learning as well. You know, do you tamper with what you know, and take a risk and a gamble? You know, I've read some information this morning because I knew you're turning up on the game, and I know there's a little bit of debate about whether or not you start the new young, exciting fullback. Excuse me.
Jordan Larmour.
Jordan Larmour. Yeah, I've seen him play. He's an outstanding prospect, isn't he? So, you know, does Joe Schmidt take a gamble on somebody that is exciting and can play, or does he go with what he knows?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, something that I guess the All Blacks have learnt.
Well, that's a very interesting subject, because as a coach, you surely have to have the confidence in yourself and the confidence in your structures to be able to take a gamble like that. You can't be going around thinking, well, oh, my racehorse is going to get spat at over the next couple of months if my gamble goes wrong, because ultimately I've been appointed as the head coach of this team, and failure should not ultimately result in you being publicly kind of demolished by everybody around the country. That sometimes there should be a bit more of an acceptance for failure. I think we're not great at accepting that in Ireland.
Yep.
Clearly, that's not always the case in New Zealand, but then again, there's a whole new level of standard when it comes to the All Blacks.
Yeah, there is, and yeah, quite clearly, you know, the rugby is the number one sport by a million miles in New Zealand, so it is heavily critiqued, as I mentioned. But yeah, I guess you take a gamble and you take a risk. You're always going to get some fallout from it if it doesn't work, and that's the same with any sport, or with business, or, you know, if you employ somebody that you're not sure of and it doesn't work out, you're going to get criticised by the board. You know, sport is no different. So yeah, it's a conundrum, it really is, and that's why the coaches are paid the big bucks. They make the big calls and they back themselves to get it right. But you've also got to look at the flip side of the coin, which is, you know what you know where your strengths lie, you know players that respond to what you want because you've had them in the mix for a long time. Do they fit into the game plan better? You know, that's a big part of the equation. Like, yeah, you might have a guy that's got all the talent in the world, but the type of structure and game plan you're trying to play, they don't fit into that philosophy as well, because they haven't been there throughout that duration. They're fresh and new, yes, but you know, all those sorts of considerations you've got to have on your shoulders.
Yeah, and that is the very definition of the Rob Kearney versus Jordan Larmour debate, is that people would probably argue that Larmour is a more talented player, but Rob Kearney is the very definition of somebody who fits perfectly into the Joe Schmidt game plan and is a bloody good player as well himself. Yeah. When it comes to this weekend, where does this All Blacks team rank in terms of the great All Blacks teams we've seen at World Cups?
Look, I certainly think their performance against South Africa was high quality. It showed that they are a good side, and they've got a lot of experience here. They've got guys that are, you know, going to their third Rugby World Cup and have had success at two. So, you know, you factor that into some of the other talent that's come in, the likes of Richie Mwanga, you know, Anton Leonard Brown, and the evolving Artie Savea. You know, those guys weren't prominent in the last Rugby World Cup, so you know they got experience around them, which is great. When you look at guys, you know, there's half a dozen of them nearly played close to 100 or more tests, so there's lots of experience there. But they haven't played since then, since that South Africa game. They haven't been together as a team because of the cancellation and also the revolving sort of door of giving everybody a run in the pool games. So the jury's out for me on how they fit into the dynamic of great All Black sides. But I can see that if they're on their game and play well, they're going to be very difficult to beat.
Yeah, because we only got a very brief window into what they can possibly do. Well, the world got a very brief window in that, whatever, 60-minute performance against South Africa. Once South Africa had gassed themselves, then it was just absolutely awesome. Leaving Japan aside, it's the most amazing thing we've seen in this World Cup, that one-hour performance from New Zealand.
Yeah, it was. And you know, we were under pressure. That first 20 minutes, South Africa had the rub of the green. They were playing good rugby. And then, yeah, the tempo of the game, they just buttoned off in a couple of areas. And then all of a sudden, it just clicked like that for the All Blacks. And they just went. And South Africa couldn't stay with them. And if they can get to that type of tempo, that ruthlessness, combined with, you know, making sure that they play sensibly, they've got enough firepower there to cause a lot of headaches for most teams. So it's just about whether or not on the day they turn up and perform. The biggest question mark for me, and Ireland will know this, so it's... There's no point in me not alluding to it, and it's no great secret, is the defence. The outside-in, aggressive line-speed defence. The Lions troubled them with it. Ireland have troubled them with it in the past. So have England and Wales. And they've not adjusted to it very well. Now, South Africa have been doing it, and it was causing them problems, but they seem to have worked it out. Have they worked it out enough that what's coming from Ireland at the weekend with that type of defence, that they can break it open, because they haven't been able to in the past?
Yeah, I was at the Ian Foster press conference yesterday, and he was asked specifically, why is it that Andy Farrell's defence has managed to give you so much problems?
Yep.
And he was like, well, you'll have to ask him, mate. So he wasn't too happy with the question, I don't think.
Yes.
What is it about Andy Farrell's defences that do manage to trouble the All Blacks?
Yeah, look, well, I was actually coached by Faz and played with him at Saracens, and right. And got a good early taste of his sort of progress into that side of the game after retiring from playing. And he started off working as a skills coach, so he's got that mindset as well. And defence is a skill. There's no doubt that he's taking probably a lot of what he's learnt out of his experience with the Lions as well, and brought some of that experience through Sean Edwards, etc., Warren Gatlin, and the way that the Lions played and defended into the Irish setup. But you know, he's rugby league background as well, Faz, and you know, because of that, that's the way that they defend. Their wingers come. You know, if you think about normal defence, where a winger's up against a winger, you know, on defence, this guy's coming way in here.
Yeah.
And that's a long way in the field, because you're leaving all this space out here. But they're not worried about that winger out there. They're just coming in and cutting it off much earlier. That's not. We don't defend like that. You watch New Zealand defend, we simply do not defend like that. We don't want to give space in that channel, and we're not naturally used to defending that way. Yes, we'll bring line speed up, but it won't come way from out to in. So that's what he's brought in, and that's a very much a rugby league thing. They'll go in and smack the third, second ball carrier, and happy to leave the winger and the fullback exposed on the outside. They back themselves to cut it off.
It's a high-risk strategy against New Zealand, though.
It is, and the big thing with New Zealand was they worried about it before encountering it on the field and dealing with it instinctively. They were pre-planning a way to try and get around it. And I think you've just got to more so play what's in front of you and make good split decisions, you know.
This is before the test last year, was this?
Yes, absolutely. And I think they've learned a little bit how to evolve in that respect. They went out there and decided that a cross kick would work, but they set the cross kick up.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it was very readable by the defence, and it didn't really, you know, it didn't cause any problems for Ireland. So I think what they've learnt now is they know that the cross kick will work, but you can't set it up. Just you've got to mentally, when you see it and the opportunity's there, do it. You know, if there's an opportunity for the man out behind the first defensive line, like the transition runners, because the guy's coming up quick. So, you know, those things you've instinctively just got to do. You can't pre-plan what the defence are going to do. You've got to see what's in front of you, and I think they've got a lot better at doing that.
Mm. I think it was Borden Barrett at 10 and Damien McKenzie at 15 in Dublin last year. How different a prospect is Moonga and Barrett in those positions?
Well, Barrett's a dangerous player wherever he plays, and I think we all know that, and his speed is one of the reasons why. What Moonga brings is he's not afraid to throw the pass. And so he'll engage defenders at the line, and if you leave him, he's got great footwork and acceleration, and he'll beat you. But when he sees that outside in defence, and the pass has got to be made at the right time, and it's got to be accurate, and it's got to be done, and you know, like I said, on instinct, he'll throw it. Mm. Bowden got a little lateral. He would take a couple of steps lateral across the field, then he'd see those defenders in his eye line, and he would hesitate and not throw the pass. And that just makes it worse. Right. And he was getting shut down. So what Moonga will do, he'll be straighter, and he won't be afraid to rip that pass out there.
So basically moving Barrett to 15 has not been just about Barrett being more effective as a 15. It's almost about some of the weaknesses he had in it closer to the defensive line.
Oh, yeah, to a degree, but I think he learnt, though, as well.
Okay,
it was causing him some issues, but I don't doubt that if he had to start at fly half at the weekend, that he would be able to do what Moonga is doing. He would do a great job. So it's just the balance now in the way that they want to play. They want to have two pivots involved so that he can slot in as a first receiver, which also asks the defence different questions, because you've got a first receiver that can go on the other side of the ruck. And that when players with great instinct as first receivers getting their hands on the ball early are on either side of the breakdown, the defence have got to think a bit more about turning in. So I think that helps as well.
One of the last things I just wanted to ask you about, Justin, was about Conor Murray's performances so far this calendar year. Obviously, ends 2018 is arguably the best scrum half in the world. Mm. This year hasn't gone amazingly for him, but I do wonder if he was so central to Ireland's tactical plan in terms of box kicking that as soon as you figure out Ireland tactically, suddenly Conor Murray's performance dips. I'm not sure what you've made of his graph this year.
Well, he's a high-quality player, and he is world-class. And on his day, he's capable of causing lots of teams big headaches because he's intelligent. I think what has happened with Ireland is, yes, they've become predictable and they haven't evolved their kicking game. And because of that, I think Conor Murray got given the mantle of being the best scrum half in the world. But a lot of the plaudits that were coming his way were about the way that he controlled the kicking game.
Sure.
So then teams analyse it and go, okay, what are his idiosyncrasies? When he gets set to kick, where does he normally kick? What areas does he want to put it in? And so the back three adjust, wingers adjust, they get used to it, and they know and expect what's coming. What I do think is what he's done then is not being able to have the rest of his game in sync. He's got a great running game, but you don't see it now because he's used so regularly as a kicker. So what I'm basically trying to say is proportionately the balance in his game plan is out. So the way that he plays is he's become ultimately more of a kicking scrum half than having all of it together as a balance, you know, defence, a running game, passing game to the breakdown quickly, and the kicking. He's gone 60-70% to a kicking scrum half. And I don't think that's been good for his game. Like, I know myself, when I wanted to get myself into the game, I wanted to take a couple of steps, bring a defender in, put someone in a hole, or if they drift off me, take a break, and really ask some questions, which takes pressure off everybody outside you as well. And I just don't think his balance is right in his game. He needs to. He's still a quality player, and he's still got it in him. You just wonder what messages he's been giving and how he should play out there.
Yeah, well, I was just about to say that. The fault clearly doesn't lie with him then, because they're a very well-drilled team, and clearly Schmidt wants him to be a primarily kicking scrum half.
Yep.
Does it kind of break your heart a little bit to see a scrum half being forced to do that?
Yeah, it does. And I think, like I said, but what that does is it affects the balance of the way that you can play as well, because a lot of the kicking is coming off nine, then teams know that, and teams adjust and adapt. You've still got great kickers across the board. You know, if Carney is to play, he's got a cracking left boot on him, hasn't he? And you know, Johnny Sexton's a good kicker. So I just think the sort of algorithm and balance of the way that they're playing is out. It's off, and it's affecting the way that Conor plays. Like when he was at his best, he was running, he was passing, he was kicking, you know, he was involved in defense. He gets over the ball really well. You know, he had a real multi-purpose game. Now it's become a bit too predictable.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. You were saying before we came on air here that it's going to rain on Saturday, which is good news for Ireland.
You started to do a rain dance when I said that. It's like, please.
does it affect your thinking this at all? Like, I presume you're tipping the All Blacks. Just by how many is what I'm asking?
Dependent on the weather, I think, yes, you're right, it would suit Ireland because they've got a very impressive forward pack and some good, strong ball carriers if the game is to come a bit tighter. If the All Blacks can go out there and play at tempo and pace, which I know that they'll want to do, the only thing, just very briefly, about that outside into defence is after the first phase, they've got a long way to go back and regroup and organise to get yourself set to come and do it again and then come and do it again. So if you can play quickly after that first initial contact zone, then it can cause that defence real headaches. So if they can play at tempo and play at speed, I don't think Ireland will be within 10, 15 points of the All Blacks. I didn't mean to come on the show and try to be too arrogant, but I just feel the way that Ireland are playing at the moment and the way the All Blacks are going to play, that could be the case if it's dry.
Well, it's not arrogance if you're giving an actual point for it, and that it is a very good point that defensively, if they are getting good, clean ball, quick ball out on the wings, they have the most terrifying set of wingers in the game right now, so it could be curtains at that point, but we'll see. We live in hope, and let's hope that the rain does come down, Justin.
Yeah, well, this is right. But and in saying that, though, I just to sort of finish off in the same breath, I haven't been overly impressed with Ireland in this tournament and haven't been overly impressed with, and I'm sure everybody agrees with, the Six Nations wasn't great. Their performances haven't been amazing, but they've got it in them. And I just wonder when that performance is coming, when they show that mental fortitude, the players that need to stand up, who everybody are criticising being old, stand up for this one big match. And it worries me that one big match might be this quarterfinal. And obviously Joe Schmidt as well, could be his last game. That motivates, there'll be some emotion there. So yeah, that, in the same breath that I think we could win by 10 or 15, I'm slightly worried that there's a big performance in Ireland somewhere at some stage.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen it yet.
Thank you for leaving us on a very hopeful note anyway,
okay,
Justin.
No worries.
And thank you very much for being so generous with your time. Great to catch up.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Cheers.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.